Cape Talk. Cape Talk. A world view from London with Adam Gilchrist.
Adam, good morning. How are you this morning?
Wait. I'm terribly well, thank you very much. Well, snow and ice on the ground and a chill in the air, but warmth in my heart. How's that?
That's perfect. I've been loving the photos of, from friends in London posting all of the snow that's over there. Interesting news from Moderna. As the two countries that we represent who have these 501Y, you've got V1, we've got V2. Those variants seem to have some challenge from the likes of Moderna. Some pretty good news.
Yeah, it's absolutely good news, it looks like. And it's one of those things, isn't it, where the shorthand around the world for these variants is the South African variant and the UK variant, or in some cases the Kent variant, which is a bit specific perhaps. But anyway, some relief because of the rate of infection from these variants in some countries, mine included. So much conjecture, but scientists at Moderna, I guess we are talking about the pharmaceutical company's own researchers, but nonetheless, they say their vaccine appears to work with the more infectious variants of COVID-19. Calming words from experts here as well, who say that, yes, the virus may mutate and may mutate many more times and already has mutated. Most of us wouldn't have noticed or wouldn't have known. But they simply remix and match the vaccine to tackle it. An epidemiologist says, you know, essentially, don't worry. But I guess the thing to get our heads around, and this might take some doing, is that we're in this for the long haul, and it is entirely possible that we have to get yearly or even six-monthly jab updates, a jab every 6 months or so, just in order to cope with the virus and the variants. And we might just have to get used to that, and so might our hospitals and health services as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be so many variants to come. It's interesting to hear this from Moderna. I know Pfizer has also indicated that theirs works just fine. And, of course, it's significantly cheaper than that one. But let's hear from Oxfam. What is their cunning vaccine plan?
Yes, Oxfam getting stuck in to the whole issue. Oxfam says that the world's 10 wealthiest men could and maybe should pay for vaccines for all of us. The charity calculates that it's not just completely pie in the sky. What they're saying is that the top 10, and probably beyond that as well, increased their wealth during the pandemic, in some cases because of the pandemic, by over $500 million, enough, they say, to stop vaccine poverty. Plus, they say, the researchers at Oxfam, that the 10 wealthiest are worth about $12 trillion between them, which is equivalent to what G20 countries have spent on medicines and hospitals and combating the lockdowns. So it would wipe out a good deal of wealth. And obviously, the 10 wealthiest gentlemen of the world are not about to just get rid of their fortunes and their incomes, but the report, the inequality virus, absolutely tots up the figures. And do you know what? Taxes on the super rich are always more popular the further from the super rich that you are.
No, this is true, but I mean, there are a few. I think Warren Buffett is amongst them. There are a few who are open to it. But the frustration here, Adam, is, you know, these are the kind of organizations, Amazon, for example, who fired workers who were striking for more healthcare coverage. There were workers who were striking because they weren't only working for delivering essential items via Amazon, and Amazon was allowing people to sell anything during a pandemic. And he makes his money not on the basis of, like, altruism and, you know, people are timed on their toilet breaks. And having us all healthy, by the way, is better for them all to make more money.
And of course, the thing is as well, is that when we talk about the super wealthy, in some cases that includes politicians. In other cases, politicians are their friends. And after all, the taxes that Oxfam talks about are imposed by politicians, and it might not be in their interests, quote, to tax super rich. And certainly it's often quoted that, well, if you overtaxed Jeff Bezos, he'd simply up sticks and go move to the Bahamas or something along
nonsense.
Those lines. Yeah,
every country must have some balls. But I hear you. I mean, sorry, not nonsense to you, nonsense to them. It's just painful because Oxfam always releases some kind of a report around this time. Of course, this is WEF Week. It's World Economic Forum. It's happening digitally at this time.
Yes,
and it's starting to seem as though it is actually a collation of meetings of government heads and companies whose vested interest is in talking about what could change, but making sure that they maintain the status quo. And it's a little frustrating. But okay, Rudy Giuliani, speaking of the status quo, is being sued by that interesting voting company.
I'm old enough to remember the days when Rudy Giuliani was
a great guy.
Hero worshipped as the guy who cleaned up New York. He made Times Square safe to go in again. I remember being there with a mate in the early 80s, and it was one crime-ridden, dodgy part of New York. And yet, anyway, these days, he's a slightly different character, isn't he? And basically, the firm which provided voting machinery, or at least some of the voting machinery in the U.S. presidential election, is filing a defamation suit. Therefore, they are suing Donald Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, although I don't know if he's still his lawyer, but anyway, maybe his ex-lawyer. Remember, of course, that Rudolph Giuliani and Donald Trump and others claimed the election was stolen, that votes went missing, it's not fair, they stamped their feet, and in fact, Mr. Giuliani specifically said the voting machines switched votes. The company, Dominion, is now suing him for $1.3 billion in damages. They say they've also had to spend $500,000 on extra security for their staff because of all the allegations that Dominion staff have not been safe from the more extreme elements of American society. I don't know. The only thing is, of course, proving libel, proving the damage to reputation might be awkward. So what we might have is a right lawyers tag team WrestleMania in jelly, ultimately.
Very interesting stuff. And then finally, important development here. Keira Knightley has a new nudity clause.
Yes, she has made this very public for a reason, I guess. She says she will no longer shoot any nude scenes in her films, or indeed sexy romps, whatever, in front of a male film director. She says this is partly down to vanity, but also down to the, as she puts it, the male gaze. There are, of course, all kinds of nudity clauses in film actor contracts. The male-female thing can be sometimes tricky to get around, I'm sure. But interesting, isn't it, that doesn't everyone act professionally? Is that the issue? Is this right? That, I mean, could a male star insist on something similar? Or what if it was the reverse? What if someone said, I insist it's a female director, and he's a male? Do you know what? Good on her, fine, if she wants to make a stand. She's not exactly known for her nude scenes, and Keira Knightley does concede that, you know, age 35 and a mother, maybe, you know, her career has moved on a little bit in other directions. But nude scenes, I've never had to shoot one, apart from obviously right now, and there's a whole clause about that, as you know, in my contract.
Oh, right, naturally. Adam, I want to call you out very briefly. I'm sorry to do this to you.
Go on.
But your statement about 35 being a mother is exactly the male gaze that she's talking
about. No, that's, but she has said that. She has.
No. I see. It's okay. But then she, okay, so she needs to be cognizant of that. Fair enough.
Redefining herself is part of it, along with also the other part being the male gaze. Yeah.
I'm with you. I have to say this. I mean, just to answer some of your questions, yes, we have seen problematic situations in the filming of these scenes, not just in a Weinstein-esque way, but just, you know, Anza and I were talking about it a little bit earlier, in many respects in nude scenes, and I love the way you put it, sexy romp scenes. Women's sort of body parts tend to be inordinately shown, more the more private ones, as opposed to like a man's back or calf or heel, and except maybe in Bridgerton. And one of the things that I think is quite important, of course, is, you know, we've actually spoken to film sensitivity executives specifically for this on film sets on our previous show Upfront, and it's become quite a big deal. Her star power is not as big as it used to be, but maybe this encourages others with as much star power, or bigger star power, to who've been making more movies more recently to move in this direction, because it is quite important. Hello, Adam. All right, we'll catch up with you tomorrow.